So hi everybody, and welcome along to this class about establishing value practice. And for those of you online, welcome, nice to see you, nice to be with you. Well, our class is about establishing the study practice, and in terms of the study that's gone before, there's been like seven different modules. So some of them like how to meditate, the mind, the path itself, all these different things. And this will sort of lead you up to, you know, you're sitting there and say, well, I'd like to practice. What do I do? And this course has been about that, what you could do. So we'll begin by doing what we always do whenever we engage in a practice. So that is, first of all, to get comfortable in your seat, and then we'll do a short breathing meditation, and we'll say some prayers together, and then we'll actually begin the class. So yeah, make yourself comfortable in your seat. It basically means that you have your back straight and your shoulders relaxed. So you can keep your eyes open or closed, whatever feels most comfortable for you. And you allow yourself to breathe normally and naturally. So the body is breathing itself, just as it does when you go to bed at night and go to sleep. It's a very natural process. So just to repeat, you're sitting on your chair, and your back is straight and your shoulders are relaxed. And you're breathing normally and naturally. And as you breathe normally and naturally, there'll be movements taking place in the body. So sometimes the movements, you'll notice them at the abdomen, sometimes up in the upper chest. And what I'd like you to do is just sort of place your awareness wherever you feel movement in the body as you breathe. And the reason for doing this is just to slow down and to be in the body, to be relaxed in the body. You find yourself still thinking about different things. See if you can just relax a little more. Drop your thoughts and come into feeling. Feeling the movements within the body as you breathe normally and naturally. Allow yourself to relax and to breathe normally and naturally. As you feel more relaxed, imagine the space above you is filled with beings of light. And the space around you is filled with your friends, other family members, people you've had difficulties and misunderstandings with, and strangers. I think all these people around you, including yourself, have an equal wish to avoid suffering. Meaning everyone does not want to experience suffering. They wish to avoid it. And equally, everyone wishes to be happy. And equally, everyone lacks genuine, long-lasting happiness. Now, the causes that produce suffering can be eliminated because they're based on a faulty idea. And the potential for genuine happiness abides equally within each of us. This potential is a natural aspect of the mind. Now, to dispel the causes of our suffering and to actualize genuine happiness, we have to abandon or drop wrong ideas that we have about ourselves and the world. And this is possible. So I'd like you to make the aspirational wish to be able to do that. To abandon or to drop all the wrong ideas you have and to actualize genuine happiness for yourself. So if you can help others do the same. I think that the beings above us, the enlightened beings, the figures of light, they have done that. They have achieved genuine happiness. They have effortless wisdom and compassion and skill to help us and others do the same. And what we're going to do is to take refuge in them. In other words, direct our ways of behaving and thinking to be the same as the enlightened beings. So for those of you online and those of you here, I'll put up a slide, and this is the aspirational wish that we have to bring about enlightenment for ourselves and for others. So we can recite this together in English. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So in response to this prayer that we've made, I think that from the heart of the Buddha above us, lights and nectars move out from his heart and wash over you. And they remove every hindrance and obstacle that you have to generating wisdom and compassion and skill. And I think that the wisdom and compassion and skill that you have right now has become fully flourishing. You look around at others and you see that everyone else is still suffering. And you see, that's because their compassion has not been developed, nor their love, nor their sense of joy or equanimity. So you decide, I'm going to help them do that. So you recollect these four immeasurable thoughts of compassion, love, joy, and equanimity, and decide to establish all beings in those four immeasurable states. In response to this decision, once again, rays of light and nectar move out from the heart of the Buddha above you. They wash over you and over the crowd of people surrounding you. They remove every hindrance and obstacle to these four immeasurable ways of being. And you think, I have now immeasurable love, immeasurable compassion, immeasurable joy, and immeasurable equanimity to all beings. So in response to this power, we can recite the seven limb prayer. I think that this is actually going on as we recite it. So together, reverently, I prostrate my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginning this time, and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great and the ultimate. Now, what are the, there's a number of different causes that produce suffering within us and other people. And one of the major causes is just clinging to these wrong ideas. So here we're going to let go of that clinging, and we're going to do it by offering a symbolic representation of our body, speech, and mind in the form of the world itself. This is called the mandala offering. let's offer this, thinking that by doing so, all of our needs are going to be met, and we have no need for greed or risingness. So this ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Mary, four conquerors for seven of them. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Ilam Guru Ratna Nainaraka Maryataya. So the offering has been released and it's accepted by the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas above us. And the Buddha smiles at us. And we look up into his eyes and acknowledge that smile. And we feel accepted and at ease. And now the emanation of the Buddha leaves his heart, moves through space and comes to abide above the crown of your head. He's facing in the same direction you are. Then he descends, entering the crown of your head, coming down to the rest of the level of your heart. And the brightness of his light body increases, filling your body and mind. The light expands, going out through the pores of your skin and fills all of space. And wherever there are beings within space, they're touched by that light and similarly transformed into a state of full awakening. And a sense of natural joy arises within you based on the fact that you've established all beings in the perfected state. When the light begins to withdraw from the 10 directions of space, it re-enters your heart. You find yourself embodied once again, breathing normally and naturally, sitting on your seat. With God, this practice has just been done on the level of imagination. But nevertheless, it's set in place a potential to bring this about in actuality. And then you breathe in deeply through your nostrils and exhale through your mouth. And allow your eyes to blink and move your limbs in whichever way you want to. And feel yourself on your seat, either in the class or in front of the screen. And once again, I'd like to welcome you to the course. And we'll have a look at what we've done and then we'll actually engage in the teaching. So this is our class 7. So this is some of the material we've covered. We looked at this term Dharma, and then we also looked at how you can become familiar with it through the process of meditation. So the word Dharma is a Sanskrit word. It's got about 9, 10, maybe even 11 different meanings. The meanings that we should take from it, which are the simplest ones, are the Dharma just means the teaching. The teaching from the Buddha is called the teacher. And the stomach is, once again, you can look at it a couple of different ways. One is this verbal teaching or the teaching that you read and listen to and study. That's one side of Dharma. The other Dharma is called the Dharma of realization, where what you've read and studied, they've made such an impact on your life that you become this different person. You're acting in response to what you've heard, read, and listened to. You become what they call a Dharma person, a person who sort of embodies the teachings of the teacher, the Buddha. Meditation is a process of familiarizing your body, speech, and mind with those teachings. So you can do it by like sitting down on chairs and, you know, with your eyes closed and posture, thinking about different reasons or visualizing it. Or you can just do it over a cup of tea, reading. The meditation just really means a familiarization or the cultivation of whatever brings greater happiness, which is what we call virtue. ASIS course is really about a meditation practice that we can engage in. One of the practices within that is called a speech blessing. And it's a very skillful way of what they call purifying the speech. So we know that when we speak, oftentimes we're not all that skillful in it. Sometimes we can speak in ways that harm other people or that we're misunderstood. So this practice is a way of clearing those misunderstandings up that we have with our own way of speaking. There's a lovely little acronym you can use, just called THINK. So it's you think before you speak. And in other words, you ask yourself, is this truthful, what I'm about to say? That's for the T, for the first THINK. H is for helpful. Is actually what I'm going to say helpful for the person? Is it intelligible? Is it necessary to even speak? And lastly, is it kind? So you can ask yourself those sort of questions before you actually speak, or catch yourself as you're speaking and go, oh, is this really necessary? Maybe I should not say anything. So it's just a way of helping you speak, because for most of us, we're not going to be killing people or killing animals. For most of us, we're not going to be stealing things. And for most of us, we're not going to be engaged in sexual misconduct. So they're the actions of the body, but we're all going to be speaking. And that's where most harms come about, just to unskillful speakers.
And this speech blessing would also work for when you're just chatting online or on Facebook, writing things as well.
This is right, yeah. So this is a communication. So we've been sort of learning how to do that. We've also gone through five of the preparations that we do. Today we're going to do the sixth one. So before you do an actual meditation, you prepare to do it. And there are five steps you can go through in that preparation process. And we've been talking about that for the last 6 weeks or so. And finally, we've been talking about everyday Dharma. So what that's about is that if we just practice on the meditation cushion, it's going to take us a very, very long time to actually change our behaviours. Because we're often only meditating for less than an hour for most of us. That leaves 23 hours of the day. So 23 times versus one time, our practice may not be very strong. So you want to use those other 23 hours skillfully to help us change our behaviour. And this is what we've been talking about, what we call everyday Dharma. So, you can use the fact of going to sleep, eating, going to the toilet, walking, all those sort of things can be means to develop more virtue. But now today, we're going to look at a practice called the mandala offering. And this is one of the preparations. We'll also include an everyday Dharma practice. And like I said, this preparatory practice of the mandala offering, which is included with another section called requests for inspiration. So one of the things that will happen as you engage in the practice of Dharma, is your way of looking at the world is going to change. Now, if it doesn't, you're not really, something's going to miss here. Now, what I mean by that is not, the way we relate to the world will change. So when I say the world, I don't mean the world that you objectively, like it's out there. Right? It's like you're looking at me and this is the world that you're seeing. So it's not that world I'm talking about. I'm talking about your inner world, how you apprehend it, what's going on in your mind as you engage with it. If that doesn't change, there's something seriously amiss in terms of your practice. So all Buddhist practices trying to bring that about. The reason for doing that is, from a Buddhist perspective, our relationship to what we call the outer world is seriously flawed. And that's one of the major ways we produce suffering for ourselves. So we've got to establish a new relationship with what we call the world. And really, this world is our own mind. So we need to try and have a like I said, new relationship to the mind itself. One of the ways we can do that is through this mandala offering. And these are some of the material that I've relied upon to present the course. Now, when you make this mandala offering, so we'll talk about the mandala shortly, but there are different ways you can do it. So there are different forms of mandala. So there's what they call the outer mandala, which is basically the world itself, the universe. That's the outer mandala. But then there's the inner mandala, and that's your inner world. Then there's what they call the secret mandala. And lastly, there's the mandala they call the mandala of suchness. But each one is more subtle. Subtle meaning a little bit more difficult to understand, but also less gross, you might say. So this first book up the top with His Holiness's face on, that's a terrific book for discovering information on what they call the inner, the secret, and the suchness offerings. There's not much information you'll find about that normally in any type of book you come across. Most of the material is about the outer mandala, in other words, the outer world, the world that we can all see and engage in. And that sort of stuff is in the next book, Steps on the Path to Enlightenment, that dark brown one. Now, the mandala offering really is primarily psychological. So the books that really deal with that is this book called Gradual Awakening by Miles Neal, Orderly Chaos by Chogyam Trungpa, Not for Happiness up the top, and Turning Confusion to Reality. They're really all about the psychological aspects of the mandala. And these books, not for sale, Turning Confusion into Clarity. What's particularly good about them, Turning Confusion into Clarity, Not for Happiness. What's that?
You said not for sale.
Oh, did I? Sorry. Before you can slip. What's particularly good about them is the naturalness and the simplicity of speech. So it's very easy to understand, you know, because when you sort of see what people, when they actually make them, it's like, what on earth is everybody doing? It's weird. But when you read something like it, you go, oh, okay, I get it. So I find that very helpful. So now the next thing I'm going to do is have a look at this everyday Dharma, and then we'll actually move into the stuff about the mandala. They can turn eating into a virtuous practice. So we eat every day, we drink every day. So whenever we eat, it can remind you to go, oh, here's a chance for me to actually transform my mind. I can do something just before I eat or while I'm eating that will make me a better person in some way. Now, whenever we practice Dharma, there's a real simple way to think about it. Well, I think it's simple. You're either putting, this is what you're always doing, you're putting something down and you're picking something up. So you go, what am I putting down? You go, whatever causes suffering, I'm putting that down. Whatever I'm picking up is to bring about greater happiness to myself and other people. I'll pick up virtue, drop non-virtue. So you go, okay, so how can I relate that to eating? Now, for most of us, when we eat, ask yourself why you eat. Why do you eat? Anyone? Nourishment?
Survival.
I'm
hungry.
I'm hungry. Right? Yep, that's right. Eat in a family gathering, community. Most times we, and what's eating mainly about though? Who's it focused on?
Nourishment.
So is that me? Right? We're nourishing.
No. Danny's also said because we want to distract ourselves.
Well, that's another reason for eating, isn't it?
Yeah, like comforting.
Yeah, yeah. But if you always ask that, I want to distract myself, comfort eating. Comfort for who? It's not me. If it's survival, who's it for? It's for me.
Yeah.
So always focus on me. Now, it's not, no, we're not talking about selfishness. This is not selfish. Eating is not selfish. If you don't eat, we're going to die.
It's
So if I don't eat this, that's about me, and I can't help others, that's about me.
But isn't that what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. There's nothing wrong with this. I'm just saying, just asking, who's eating about it? It's primarily me. If I'm not fed, I can't help others. That's what I'm getting at, right? It's a natural thing. This is not, eating is not being selfish. It could be. If there's only so much food there, it's between me and you, and I go, no, this is for me. Well, a lot of people eat like that, don't they? So eating in itself is not virtuous or non-virtuous. It's neither. It's just a neutral activity we engage in. There's nothing wrong with it. And if we don't, we'll die. So those times when we eat, we don't think about it a great deal. We just eat. So it's like a neutral activity. However, this neutral activity could go either in terms of altruistic eating, like for the benefit of others, or it could be done selfishly. Look, either way. Now, if it's done in terms of selfishness, or even bringing greed into it, like I want more and I want it for me. Now that's, from a Buddhist perspective, problematic. So how do we tackle that problem? When we eat it, we say, like, I'm eating it for the sake of others. We remind ourselves of why we're eating this. So I'm eating this food, I'm imbibing it, to strengthen my life, my body, my mind, so I can become enlightened. So it's not just survival. We do need food to survive, no doubt about it. But actually, that's all the neutral stuff.
And it's also very different from just eating chips in front of the telly.
Yeah, that's something sort of mindless eating, or eating for distraction, all these sort of things. So eating in itself is neutral. But we can go either way after neutral. So this is, let's just transform the neutral act of eating into something positive. And so what we can do there is we say these simple things. May we and those around us in all future lives never be separated from the three rare sublime ones, meaning full awakening, the Dharma and the community. Continuously make offerings to the three rare sublime ones, and receive the inspiration of the three rare sublime ones. So we're making up this idea of we're making an offering of the food that we are imbibing. In other words, so that's a practice of generosity. That's a good thing. But generosity works against greed and selfishness. So that's how we do it. It's a simple thing of going, when I eat, I needed to survive and strengthen myself. But why? Because just like the example, I need to help others become much better people. And just like the example of like putting on your face mask first and then helping others. That's why I'm eating, to bring about the welfare of all human beings.
And isn't the inspiration of the three rare sublime ones a way of saying, by offering this actual food, may I have the nourishment of the Dharma, the spiritual nourishment and fuel, like inspiration?
Yep, that's right. That's also included with it. But this is, you make lots of offerings. As you can see, we've got an altar behind us, and then many offerings you can make. So the offering of food is seen symbolically as the offering of concentration. So you make the food, you offer the food as a way of going, may I have a more concentrated mind. Because anybody who's ever become hungry, you'll know that you're not, you sort of get weak, the mind's all over the place. We know we need some food, then we sort of get grounded and get in there on the right. It's interesting, I find it's like eating, so we pull things into our body to nourish the body and mind. But if we can join it with Dharma, it's like we get more of it because we're actually offering it up in our mind, aren't we? We say, yeah, I'm eating it, but I'm giving it away. I'm offering it to the three jewels, the same thing. I'm offering it to all sentient beings.
So then you're offering to more than your family.
Yeah, oh, heck yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, if you want to sort of say, the bigger the offering becomes, the more, the better it is for you. That's what it's sort of saying. Okay, so let's now have a look at these preparatory practices. There's six of them, and where this section that we're going to be talking about today fits in. So in preparation for a meditation center, a meditation practice, we have to create a space for ourselves to do it. So obviously we clean the area that we're in, and there's different things you can say and how you can imagine it. That's the first step. Then you make these offerings. And the offerings can be of all sorts, like I said, they can be food and drink. They can be just yourself sitting down there doing the practice. That's what you're offering. When you sit down to do the practice, you need to sit in the right posture because basically you're there for half an hour or more and you want to make it as easy as possible for yourself. Once you've sat down, then you set out consciously to yourself your purpose. So in other words, you're saying, well, I'm sitting here on the mat of this meditation because, and you give your reason. So the reason here is what they call a refuge of altruism. So what you're saying is, I am a refugee from suffering and its causes. That's why I'm here. I want to deal with my own suffering and its causes. I want to abandon those, but I want to do it for more than just myself. So you add altruism, it's like for the benefit of others. That's why I'm sitting here and I'm about to experience. I want to develop my wisdom and compassion, every other skill I have, to benefit me and others. And as a way of doing that, I engage in the seven limbs that we did just a minute ago. So you said, okay, so reverently I prostrate my body, speech, and mind. So you go, okay, so what am I putting down there? My sense of arrogance. What am I picking up? A sense of humility and willingness. I make offerings, but actually I've imagined. I'm putting down greed and wiseness, and I'm opening up the ability to be generous. Like the fact that you're sitting there putting your time in is an act of generosity. But I know I've got all these problems and they get in the way sometimes. So I declare all my negativities accumulated since beginning this time. So in other words, you're saying, I want to lay down here, my greed, my anger, my ignorance. I just want to put all those down for the moment while I engage in the practice. So you go through each of these seven steps. At the very end, the last one, you go, okay, so I'm going to dedicate the time that I'm going to spend doing this meditation practice to achieve the goal that I've set for myself, which is to have perfect wisdom, compassion, and ability to help others. That's in the seven limbs. And now we come to today's practice where we do this, the offering of the mandala and the requests for a greater inspiration. So what's a mandala? Let's answer that question first of all. Okay. Here's a couple of pictures of them. And here's another one right here sitting in front of me. These are all called mandalas. If I put my fingers like that and hold them up for you like that, that's also called a mandala. Like this.
Don't worry, we'll learn how to do that in a moment.
Yeah. So it's just the physical mandala. And I mean, I put it together very quickly. I cut it off. It takes a little bit of time to get your fingers used to that. You can see them on paintings. Some of you might have even seen monks make them, big sand mandalas. That's another mandala. Sometimes you've got 3D dimensional ones when they build them. It's like buildings. Some have been quite large. And there's lots of imaginary ones you can do. So basically, mandala is kyor in Tibetan, which basically means there's a center and that which circles it. And I think there's another one too. The other meaning of it is to absorb the essence. So mandalas are basically two or three dimensional representations of everything, and the whole universe itself. Or we talk about the outer mandala, that's the symbolic representation of the universe. The inner mandala is a symbolic representation of your inner universe.
So your whole psyche.
Your whole psyche, body, transformed completely in your mind.
Universe.
So you see, what is expressed externally through the different symbols is to be understood inwardly. Each line and color used in a mandala relates to a different aspect of the mind and awareness. That's why there's such a rich display in the different forms. Now, why make them? In other words, basically means to extract the essence. On the other side of it, this extracting the essence is to generate realizations and to, in a way, demonstrate what they call the six perfections. So the six perfections are the perfections of generosity, ethics, patience, joy, concentration, and wisdom. So all of these mandalas, they contain all of that. Now, when we engage in a spiritual practice, we want to accomplish what that practice is meant to do. To bring about that accomplishment, you need, two basic things. You need to have what they call the merit to achieve it, meaning the necessary energy, everything that supports accomplishment. The other thing you need is to get rid of everything that hinders that accomplishment. So on this side here, the merit of realizations of the path and six perfections, we would call that the method. But to extract the essence is really talking about the wisdom. So the wisdom and the method are always together, even though it might not seem like that often. So in other words, when it's the same to extract the essence of anything, it's sort of saying, what is this thing? What am I actually doing? How does this phenomena exist? You're really looking beyond the appearance. So if you look at the mandalas, these pictures of things, it's like, you ask them, what is that? And so I wonder, you say, wow, it's this colourful picture, and blah, blah, blah. And you might go, well, what's it for? So each time you're trying to drill down, aren't you? You're looking beneath the appearance and going, but really, what is this? That's we're getting at in terms of the essence. What is this? Well, if you do that deeply enough, what's going to happen is it's going to vanish. And that doesn't mean to say it doesn't exist. It means that you found the deepest nature of this phenomenon, which is the point. You've got to sort of get it so you can integrate these two things. So some of you may have heard of the Heart Sutra. In the Heart Sutra, they say form is empty, emptiness is form. These mandalas at this level is the form. As you can see, it's got color, it's got shape, all that sort of stuff. Right? But it's also saying this shape is empty. So the shape and the colour is the conventional nature, the conventional truth of this mandala. But that shape and colour don't exist intrinsically. They don't exist like they appear. That not existing as they appear is the essence of it. It doesn't truly exist. It doesn't exist in the way it's appearing to you. So we go, well, how is it appearing to us? Well, answers? Hey, you just got to be honest. Just say it. Okay. that a fantasy? That's looking to me like a fantasy?
Well,
the name, the picture of it?
The colours and the...
What's it look like right now on the one on the screen?
It looks like a Lego building.
Yeah, okay, that's right. Hey, okay. Great, that's fine, isn't it? Yeah, it just looks like a Lego building.
An awesome one. Yeah, yeah, Lego set.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Where is it? I'm sorry?
Where you want it to be.
What's over there, isn't it?
It's
up there. It's on the screen. That's right. You got what's over there? That's right. It's up on the screen. Yeah, this is one of those 3D ones, isn't it? This is like, it's actually in a building somewhere. But for us at the moment, it's up on the screen. And that's all true, right? That's what it looks like. So we start off at that level. Because what we've got to do is acknowledge it. This is actually how it looks. There we go. Yeah, it looks like that. Does it exist like that? When you ask, does it exist like that, we're now getting towards the essence of it. So one thing that you're going to see here is that it appears to exist like over there. I look up there or in you or wherever it is, like it's over there, and go, so there's a gap between our perception of it and its existence. That's what it looks like. Now, if it actually existed like that, some weird consequences are going to arise. And so once you examine this consequence, it's thinking, well, it's like over there, really over there, and I'm really over here, and my senses are getting at that thing over there, and now I apprehend it. If you follow through with that, like I said, you'll discover it just cannot be that way. It cannot exist like that, even though it looks like that. But then you find, wow, there's a big discrepancy here between how things actually exist and how I'm engaging with it.
So are you talking like on a scientific level?
On a scientific level and on a Buddhist level. Either way, it's the same thing. You draw the same conclusion. There's a discrepancy here. And what the essence is getting at that. It's not true that the phenomena exists independently of my awareness. That's not true. Well, that looks true.
Because that also happens even when we're imagining a mandala. It's me imagining a mandala over there.
Yeah, that's right. That's
but,
right.
I mean, the whole thing's happening in my mind, right. But in my mind it feels separate.
That's right. Even, that's right. That's how deep it goes. That's exactly right. So that's why you do these practices so much on the imaginative level, because it's easier to comprehend it cannot be different.
It can't be separate
from my mind. My mind is actually engaging it. But when you don't do it like that, like you say, that's why it's so much that's done on the imaginative level, because that's the essence. We're not separated. We're not separated from the reality. We create the reality. We're part of it. There's no subject, object, actual duality. It just looks like it. But it's easy to discover when you use imagination. Because when you just look out at the world, immediately the gap opens up. We think real me here, real object there, and I'm really engaging with it. But like I said, from a scientific point of view, you go, no, I'm afraid it looks like that, I know, but it doesn't exist like that. The science can show us that about the external world. But if you bring it on the internal world with imagination, it's obvious. But nevertheless, we still get this weird response, isn't it? It's like, I'm still here. What I'm imagining is like over there, and it all seems real. So this is this thing about like getting at the essence of this thing, that whatever we create, we experience. We're not separate from the appearances. That's the central thinking. And that these appearances, if you go beneath the surface of the appearance, it's a space. And what that space is your own mind. But it's like looking at reflections on water. When you look at a reflection of the water, it really looks like there's a like it's right there, doesn't it? Or even if your own reflection in the mirror, it looks like, you know, you're there. but when you go there, you're not there. And this is what they're getting at, the essence. So the essence is the wisdom.
It's a bit on the slide
too long. That's right. Now, when, like Biffy pointed out, like, you know, when you create things in your imagination, that's an act. Right? In other words, that's karma. That activity is another word, activity and action, intending to do this, intending to visualize something, is a karmic act because it's intended. That brings about a consequence. So all of you know that, you know, it might not be your intention to worry about something, but when you do, it affects you, doesn't it? It's the same way if you intend to put these visualizations up in your mind, there's an effect because it's intended. The thing is that these visualizations, all this stuff, it's all the color, it's all symbolic. So it has meanings, in other words. You know, from example, when I was a kid growing up, you know, when you first start dating. So this was for me, it was like about 12 years old, right? You go around to me, and it's like, what do you do? Well, all the stuff we had was from the movies. So what do? You bring flowers and chocolates. And when you bring them over, like the girl knows, like you just have a kind of say, would you like some chocolates? Well, I bought you a flower. That flower and chocolate means something else, doesn't it? Instead of saying, like, I like you, I'm interested in you, we're going out on a date. These things are not just flowers, they're not just chocolates. Yeah,
it's like, what they are.
No, that's right. It's like, yeah, yes. That's right, they have meaning.
Yeah.
But the meaning doesn't exist on the side of the flower or the chocolate, does it? It's like, no, like, yeah, like I'm putting the meaning on, and in general, so society. So when you go over, everyone understands, oh, this young fellow likes my daughter.
Whereas if it's your auntie coming over with flowers and chocolates, it's a whole other story.
Yeah. And if you go down the shop and just see the chocolate and you eat the chocolate, it's so.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. This is what this mandala stuff will do, right? So every colour has a symbolic meaning. The shapes have meaning. The doors, like everything. Like the whole path and the realization is like is all in it. So like these mandalas here, it's like that's a palace. Right? So who's living in the palace? The idea?
I want to say Buddha.
Yeah, who's Buddha?
Us.
That's right. We are. We have created our own home. This is our palace. There's no one else creating it. We are.
Yes.
I am the deity in my palace. I am enlightened, blah, 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 blah. And all this stuff is aspects of the path that was brought about to survive in it. So it's like instead of saying, you know, like me going through talking, or yourself talking to yourself or reading it, it's like, what's that story they say about a picture?
Yeah, a
picture says 1,000 words. That's what you're doing. You just put the picture up and you go, yeah, I know this story. But that's right. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. So, you know, like we study and so forth and we learn about what all these colours mean and so forth. And then, like a shell.
Well, yeah. When you mentioned the mandala and each of the elements that are in there, like all the little bits of the house, who's there, everything, first you get the picture and then you figure out what they mean.
Mm. Yeah, so they go either way. Oftentimes it goes first up, just do it, and you don't know what you're doing, and but then you start wondering, what am I doing? Is this all airy fairy stuff? And some people really don't like it. But I think oftentimes that's because they're grasping at their outer appearances and you don't know what's going on inside. You don't know, it's a psychological story here.
So Denny said, oh, this is like a Buddhist vision board.
Yeah, that's right.
By the way, she really liked the whole Dharma Lego thing.
So this is just a little bit from Miles Neal on Gradual Awakening. So with these mandalas, you're offering them. Right? It's like you're giving them away. And one, the major idea here is just don't cling at things to be real and yours. That's what's working against.
But it's also working against just miserliness too, because you're making this extraordinarily beautiful, enormous, fantastic thing. And then giving it away.
And Ducky said, really, you see the ones that they do with the sand mandalas? It always, and then they just go cut, and then they drop it in the river. And they often cry when the waves come in, right? Because they cling to the castle. Yeah, that's right. So the parents are no problem, eh? But the kiddies all go, oh my God, they all start crying, right? But that's like, that's so much like us, isn't it? We're just bigger kiddies. Right? And we start crying when we lose our mind and our marbles and our body and all our possessions. Mm-hmm. Well, it's going, well, you know, you don't have to. They're not yours. You can let them go. And this is a way of willingly letting them go, willingly creating them and then letting them go. But just from Miles Neal's, he says, remember, psychologically and in terms of karma, the practice of gratitude, of offering, primes the mind to receive abundance. So imagine making the final gesture of gratitude to your mentor and the lineage of mental beings, as the writing beings, so, who have realized, preserved, and spread the message of awakening for the benefit of all who approach them. Also, imagine giving them all you are and have, including your flaws. And say to the mentors, I offer this mess of my life to you. Can you help me make it into something extraordinary? This is another example of karma and emptiness, because everything is workable. We can make this life of misery into a paradise by offering it to the Buddhists in a simulation, asking that they help us reverse engineer the world and ourselves. So yeah, when you begin with this practice, what you often look at is like the body's a big hindrance, it's all yucky and looking inside, you know, like, so what's all that about? You go, well, that is a sense that you bring about a sense of aversion so that we don't start looking at it and sort of wanting to possess the bodies of others. So you look at the ugly side of it. But once again, this ugliness and all that stuff, it's a dependent arising, it's empty. So you often have to look at what the purpose is of doing these things. Then when you sort of get more into it, you go, holy heck, everything is just dependent upon my mind. So why not create all this beauty and wonder? But what if I was already enlightened and never saw ugliness and had a vision and stuff like that? What would the world be like? So these guys have created, well, it would be like this. You create a world that would like to look like this. And you must know, don't ever forget, you're creating it. That's to stop you grasping it to be real and clinging to it. And that's the wisdom aspect of it. The method is just to create it. If you go back the other way, looking at the body as being an ugly object and problem for you, that body's been created through karma and delusion. That's how you look at it. You go, oh, well, I don't want to get involved with karma and delusion. So it's helpful for me to see the body that way. But all these teachings are just a method, skillful means to put down mental stuff that is problematic and to pick up other mental stuff that's more beneficial. Now, here's another mandalas, this is the mudra that we were just talking about. You know, I put my hands together like that and put it up together like this. So this is, you can look at this one here, it's once again of being a symbol of the inner mandala or the outer mandala. So what's interesting, you know, you start off like this. It's empty. You don't have anything yet. But that's the way it's always been. And then you put it together and stuff starts happening, right? You create something. And then when it finishes, you go like that and you drop it back into the uncreated. The empty. Okay, so when we put our hands like this, right? So we've got this thing in the middle, right? The two fingers sticking up in the middle.
Why don't we just...
Anyway, I cross my little fingers like that, and I put my thumbs on them, on the little pads of the fingers.
Opposite. So thumbs stay on the side of the thumbs, but the little fingers are crossed.
So it's just like you've got three fingers sticking up and two like that. Then the next, what's that, the ring finger?
Yeah.
And then it's like crossing it in. Yeah. Cross the long fingers, put the long fingers on top of one another. But
well, in the middle of something. So the easy way, folks, is you just put your fingers back to back.
Like that, yeah.
And then you cross over your little fingers and hold them down with your thumbs. Your thumbs just stay where your thumbs are on that side, the natural side. And you cross over your long fingers and you hold them with your pointers. And then what's left is in the middle is the ring fingers.
Yep, you got it. That's sharp. That looks good.
And that's Mount Meru in the middle.
After you've gone together like this and say this little prayer, we'll do that. That's the next slide. After I've made the offering.
Yeah.
So up there, like, you're offering it like this. It's like, here's your universe, right?
The universe is the palm of your hand.
That's right. And when you offer it, after you've got Idam Guru, right? The man like Kamiriya tell me.
Tip towards yourself.
You've got towards yourself, or you can tip it towards the outer. You tip it towards the outer, it's like, yeah, like that, right? If you tip it that way, it's like you're offering it to all the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas. If you're tipping it this way, it's you're tipping it towards your own realization to become enlightened. Yeah. So either way is okay. As long as you can tip it towards yourself like this, then you're like I know I'm just pretending, but still I want to get enlightened. So I'll tip it towards myself. And often it's nice like that because you come out like that, and like, whoop, it's all gone. Yeah. Okay, or you go like that, it's all gone. But it's the sort of thing of shame, once again, like the empty and the form. The empty and the form. The creation process. Now, so as you've got your things like this, so this is like this. One way you can look at this is a symbolic representation of the outer world as it was thought to exist by the early Buddhists and Hindus and that sort of thing. And their idea was at the center of the universe was a mountain. And that's those two fingers up in the middle that you hold up straight. It represents the mountain. And around it were these four lands. So that's when you've got your little fingers that you held down, the other ones up there, like that, you know? So the four lands surround this continent. So this massive universe, that there's four places where all beings exist, and there's a central axis. And this goes across so many different religions. They got this idea in the middle of the universe is a big mountain to separate them. So, okay, that's one way. Well, I like the inner way. And that's when you put it together like this. This, the two, what's called the mountain, is your spine. And what's crossed over the four lands are your arms and legs. And so you offer the sun and the moon to your two eyes. But yeah, so you offer this. I'm offering my body, me. I'm offering me to this goal called enlightenment. Okay, so when we do that outer one was like this is the way that the Hindus and the old Buddhists had this idea of the universe, how the universe is this. They had this idea in the middle is this the mountain one first. So we do that. Then when it came to the inner one, what we thought was the mountain was the actual our own spine. the spine. These four lands were our arms and legs. And the sun and the moon were our two eyes. They're not there. Sorry, the fact that you're here, this is all. Yeah, you are.
But they're also just.
So this, yeah, you can see the fingers. That's what they call the mudra. So it's a mandala mudra. On the external level, it symbolizes the cosmology. Inwardly, it symbolizes the five active organs, eye, ear, nose, tongue, and body, as well as the five consciousnesses. There are five objects. It's real big. Like I said, like it's everything. Yeah, it the levels just go down, 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 bigger, bigger, bigger. But the idea behind it is don't cling to any of it. Like it's come together and you let it go. There's a fantastic, actually it's very much like the giving and taking, isn't it?
So Denise also said that she remembers once a fellow student became very upset when I told them we could imagine giving all of our faults and bad habits and releasing these as we dissolve the mandala.
Yeah.
She just thought it wasn't right to offer them to the Buddha.
So funny. I mean, that's from our side, right? But from think of it, like if you're a Buddha and you're a fully awakened being, wouldn't you like to say, yeah, give it to me, be free? So that's... I know people do think like that. Well, I couldn't get you like crap.
You go, hey, that's the Buddha.
That's the Buddha, man. There's no problem here.
It's a fun thing, though.
Wow, well, this is such an interesting thing.
What is called that?
It's a construct.
Inception.
Yeah, that's right. So you can let it go. That's exactly right. That's how they actually exist. Talky talk. Okay.
15 minutes.
So here's the prayer. One of the things you can say, which is what we said when we began the class, this ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru. So the ground here, of course, is really your body and mind. The perfume is all your good stuff, all the merits, your virtue, everything. And it's strewn with flowers. So the perfume and the flowers represent that. Adorned with Mount Meru, your own spine, the four continents, the sun, the moon. And then you say, I imagine this is a Buddha field. That's not a middle Africa. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. And so a little chant for stuff at the bottom. This is called the simple mandala mudra with five points, a center and four directions, symbolizing the whole universe. So that's the simplest one. So wherever you go, you can just offer them. You put your hands together like that, and whoop, you got one. Otherwise, we go to the next one. There's all these different types you can do. Right? If you can do that.
So that's actually Sanskrit, that one. Yeah. So it's like an offering mandala. It's like I offer to you. The guru, this jeweled mandala, by me offering it, may all sentient beings. Something like that. So it's the actual gathering it together and offering it part. Because the rest of the verse, you're kind of building it up, and then you've got to remember to actually send it off. So it's called the send off. So the tipping towards you is to. For generating realizations, and tipping away from you is creating merit. So they both have a high meaning to it. And then you end with your hands in the just nicely in the prostration mudra at your heart. So you can go
either. Yep. Yeah. Okay, let's look at some of these mandalas. So, like I said, we've got the outer one that was like this outer universe, you can use your hands or anything like that. Do it. The inner mandala is the offering of your own physical body, visualizing different parts of the body as parts of the universe.
Like you had of the spine being Mount Meru and the continents being the hands.
The secret mandala is offering your own happiness and the biochemistry of bliss. And lastly, the substance one. This is from the highest yoga tantra. So here's the union of bliss and emptiness. But before I say about how your form is empty, emptiness is form. So here we go even deeper than that and go to actually the blissful states of the mind. They're empty too. You ask why? Because they dependently exist. So you can offer them. They also have all these different shapes. So there are square mandalas, as you can see, round, semi-round, and triangles. So I'm thinking we'd like to lift this one up.
No. Everyone can see this, right?
This is another type of mandala here. It's created. This is
the mandala set.
Mandala set. It's made up, and so you construct them. And there are different ways. So you have different levels on them. So sometimes you've got 23 different things on them. Sometimes there's 7. Sometimes there's 35. But the thing to really remember is that they're symbolic representations of something else.
So that round circle that's up there, which are, you know, lots of little dots and points in it, so that represents this, the base, then the large ring, the medium size ring, the small ring, and inside you put a little pile of jewels or grains to represent each of those points, and each of those points is a wonderful thing that you're offering. So that's why it's called, say, the 23 heaps or the 23 points mandala, Tara Pujawan, or the 37 heaps. So 37 different things, a little pile on to remind you what those things are.
And so there's different types given for different types of practices. So here's like the hearers just represents people who listen to the teachings of the Buddha. So even they made offerings, the mandala offerings. And there's different types for the different tantras and so forth. And you can make them out of different things. Like you can see here, we've got made of
metal, glass
stones, precious stones, grains of sand. One, the one I really like is one that was made out of urine and sand. So there's two guys. You know, like a master and his disciple, have been practicing for years and years, and one day the master knows you're ready. She's offered me a mandala right now. And this guy's got like nothing. Right? They're out in the desert. Pee in the ground. So he does, mixes it up as mud and goes here. Because it's not the thing. It's the symbolic value. That's what they're really offering, not the thing. So he takes it, he picks up this urine, mud, sandy thing and goes, whack, cracks him on the head with it. Goes, poof, and just goes.
So the master gets the mandala.
Yeah, the master gets the mandala and slaps the, gives it back to the disciple with a whack on the head. and that was it.
A blessing.
Yes, yeah, it's right, the blessing of the offering. So he's like, you've given something, now here it is back. Because that's how karma works. You give, you get. And what he got was the realization. It was like, from then on, it was a life of being. So I like that, man. I like those sort of crazy, strange stories. Because it takes it right out into the world of ordinariness. Like it doesn't matter about the stuff. It's really what's going on with the mind. That's the real thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, just like with the floods at the moment and all the volunteers going out and helping, like everyone's having these great realizations of compassion and empathy in amongst all the stinky sewage and mud and whatever. And you think, oh, well, those two things don't go together, but actually, it's not the stinky sewage that's the thing, is it? It's what's going on everyone's heart.
So here's the inner mandala. So this is different. Yeah, you can see different words here. So here it says, the objects of my attachment, aversion, and ignorance, friends, enemies, and strangers, and my body, wealth, and enjoyments, without any sense of loss, I offer this collection. Please accept it with pleasure and bless me with freedom from these three poisons. The three poisons, of course, would be ignorance, aversion, and greed.
So at the top on that first line, it's the objects of those three things, the greed and aversion and ignorance.
or the other words I use often is attachment.
So, I mean, this one's so nice because all the things that we get so clingy about, you can just release, or all the things that we hide and we're embarrassed, we can release and actually let them go.
That's what you sort of see here all the time. It's like it's a letting go. Because one of the things, but as you know, like, you know, when we come to die, there's nothing of any, you can't take anything with you. So if you've practiced to let go as much as you can during life, it's going to be a very simple thing. At the time of death, one of the great things you can do is you make your body the mandala that you're offering. So you don't hold to it. It's a terrifically skillful psychological tool. There's a version of this, basically the stuff, you know, as you know, you don't like it.
Yeah.
But you'll often know that when you talk about or engage with things you don't like you can have a very sort of a certainty about it. And that's what we mean like clinging to your ideas about what's horrible, what you don't like.
Jenny's saying that it's like she thinks of it as letting go of the ordinary way that we see ourselves so that we can develop ourselves to become enlightened.
Yeah,
so that
yeah,
go
for sure.
Ordinary.
Is there anything specific you want to know about aversion?
Mandala.
Yeah, well, that might be like the symbol. They're from any mandala, no aversion. Yeah, there shouldn't be any aversion to the inner mandala.
Yeah.
Friends, enemies, and strangers.
Right. So I'd be letting go Putin and the Russian army and the politicians.
Yeah. All that stuff. Well, that's like I said before, that's about your inner world. It's not the outer world. The actual world that we inhabit is that in the inner world. So it's like saying aversion to Putin, for instance. Again, from the material side, so we've got metal, plastic sets. What were you making with the little baking sets?
Yeah, so if you can't afford the, you know, the gold and silver and diamond version, then you can actually, we make little starter sets that are just out of those plastic cookie cutters that you get from the $2 shop. So they're round, they're beautiful colour, you can stick on the plastic jewels and ta-da, there you have it. Or it can be, you know, gold, actual gold plated like in the picture.
And one of the venerables, Rabina, she had a massive mandala set, right? And her thing that was on top was this big crystal ball, wasn't it? Massive and heavy. This is a Rabina, it was very cheap. You can get up, it's great.
Her mandala set was almost the size of her torso. It was really, it had everything in it.
Yeah, that's the thing, like, to give everything, to release everything, you know? To cling to anything. Now, we have some really good books in our library. This middle one, like I said, Tibetan Symbols and Motifs, that is incredibly useful. This guy is a terrific scholar and artist.
Yeah, so the art is exquisite, but the explanations are really good.
Yeah, terrific. And the other books are great for the art and the pictures and so forth.
Yeah, particularly that red one on the right there for each level of the mandala, especially with those sand mandalas, how they're like an aerial view map like this, but then it goes into the 3D aspect of it so you can tell what each part of the palace actually represents.
So imagine now, like we've created a mandala and then we've offered it, and then since we've offered it, now we ask for something. That's the next bit. So we make this a prayer, an aspirational wish. Like, so here we've made our offering. Now please grant me blessings to cease or stop immediately all wrong conceptions. From incorrect devotion to my teacher, the guru, up to the subtle dual view of the white appearance, red increase, and black near attainment. So this is, there are many different ways you can make these three purposes. This one is sort of coming in from the tantric viewpoint. What it's saying with these dual view of the white appearance reading priest and black neurotransmitter. So just like Rishi said, you know, when you imagine something, it still seems like you're here and what you're imagining is over there and it's real. That's what happens when you die. Same thing, all your senses close down, but appearances arise to your mind. And what appears to you is these three colors, there's white, red, and then black.
So that's that subtle dual view.
And it's a subtle dual view. Right? So, you know, if you have a dual view now and you imagine something, you still have it as you die. And what you can be frightened of it. Like, just like you can be scared of walking in the real darkness, you know, because you don't know what's there. So that's a false view. It's your mind creating this stuff, but if you don't know it, you get a bit freaked out.
But that whole paragraph, isn't it? It's like from the beginning of the path through devotion.
Yeah, right up to the very end.
All the way through the entire land ring.
And the tantric stages.
And the tantric stages all the way up to the most highest yoga tantra. So that sentence incorporates the entire Buddhist path.
Yeah. This is, please grant me blessings to actualize immediately all the correct realizations from guru devotion up to the unification of no more learning. So that's, once again, the tantric presentation, unification of no more learning is what you're seeking.
Which is Buddhahood.
Yeah. Please pacify immediately all outer and inner obstacles. Idam guru ratna and lakam
nariyatri amin again. So the difference between outer and inner obstacles?
The outer obstacles just could be the fact that you're living with somebody difficult, the fact that you might be dying there and somebody says something you don't want to hear. The inner obstacles is you don't have much control over your inner life. But so, as you know, weird stuff can happen to you. But that can really throw you. So you don't want that sort of thing to happen. You say, you know, may all those things not arise. So an inner obstacle, like, for instance, is while you're dying to be fearful. That's an inner obstacle. So what's the takeaway? Well, I hope you do know what a mandala is. Yeah, there's a purpose for making them and for offering them. So like I said, the major purpose of it is to stop clinging to appearances. And the other, of course, is the merit that you get from doing it. So, like I said, you always put something down and you always pick something up. So what you're picking up is the merit of doing it, and what you're putting down is the clinging. And you know, the eating could also be a form of merit making. So like, it's like, you know, with the Christians, you used to say grace. It's a very similar type of thing. It's once again, it's to stop going toward the greedy or the stingy side of eating.
Or even just keeping it neutral. So then the power of it's really quite small. It lasts only as long as the meal and the nutrients last, and then it's finished.
Yeah. So between now and then, of course, we've got different stuff up online in the
catch-up class and the news area.
So you can see the mind map up there, number two, have a look at that and see how it's all set out. On the meditation pages, there's stuff about the mandala, and on the Shakyamuni Buddha practice, there's material about the mandala. If you can, memorize it.
Memorize.
The mandala offering. So the simple one is Idam Guru Ratna.
Or else just the short mandala.
It's a very short one. That's what you want. And you can play around with your hands and see if you can get this little thing up. It helps. And it's, what I always find nice is the release of it. You know, like, so you bring it up.
Shall we do one before we end?
Yeah, so oftentimes we do one at the very end, just like, you know, do one at the beginning, sometimes you do one at the end. So we can say that by the merit of this, due to the merit of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. Idam guru ratna mandala kam nariyatri amin. There you go, that's right. Yep. It's nice, eh? Well, I've only seen the great lamas, the man, their fingers, it's just, wow, so gentle and
expressive. They really have the whole universe, the emptiness of their hands.
Like gorgeous. So you can sometimes see that online. And our final prayer, may the supreme jewel, bodhicitta, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline but increase forevermore. As long as space abides, as long as sentient beings abide, may we too abide to dispel the suffering of those. Okie dokie. Thank you very much. Good June. Thank you, Ruth. Thank you, everyone, for being here. It's been really enjoyable talking about mandala offerings. And all of you online, thank you very much for being here, and we'll see you again next week.